Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week. You're listening Post for Politics, Iowa style, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We're glad you're with us. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, here we go again. Welcome.
It's another busy Monday.
We have a heck of a lot to talk about, so let's get talking. There was big news out of the state legislature on this Monday. For starters, House Speaker Pat Grassley announced that state lawmakers will not pass Governor Riddle's signature proposal to give 10,000 families public money for private school scholarships. A big blow to Governor Reynolds. This was a priority.
It was, but it was also expected that they just didn't have the votes in the House, as we've discussed on several past programs. Yep. Every time we've talked about this, my sources have always said the same thing, that they just didn't have the votes in the Iowa House to get this thing through. And finally, the House Speaker admitted it today.
The big issue that had stopped the legislature for weeks was this issue of public money for private school scholarships. Now that's out of the way, it's not going to happen. First off, the governor vows it's not over.
Yes, she is determined to try to get that passed next year. And she's been trying to help people get elected who are on board. She's been active behind the scenes in a number of Republican primaries. And she's also been helping Republican challengers against Democrats or Republican challengers for open seats who support her position on the school vouchers.
Right. And we'll talk about more of that in just a few minutes. So the logjam started clearing right after this announcement today. And among the things the legislature quickly took action on, a moratorium on new casino licenses in Iowa.
Yeah, that was a surprise. I didn't hear anybody talking about that last week. And it was an amendment to a bill and there wasn't much discussion on the floor. So, I mean, the people in Cedar Rapids who have been backing a casino there have been working at it for years. And I never thought it was very likely that the State Racing and Gaming Commission would approve a license. They've rejected similar proposals in the past because they don't want to eat into the revenues of existing casinos. But this was news to me that the legislature was actually going to take this kind of action. And I haven't heard any comment from the governor's office on it, but I assume that somebody must have discussed it with her staff before they put this in the bill.
The legislation is going to cap the number of state-issued licenses at the current number of 19, starting next month, going to expire in a couple of years. So it's going to keep new casinos from eating into existing casinos' revenue.
Yes, that's the idea. And whenever this has come up, a Linn County casino, there have been concerns because there are two casinos less than an hour's drive from there that of course, the operators of those casinos have lobbied very heavily. And it's been clear that the Racing and Gaming Commission members, they don't want to create a situation where they approve a new license and then some of the existing casinos become unviable. That's been clear years ago in discussions when this has come up.
Laura, I hate to say this. I'm going to take a victory lap here. Ye of little faith, the legislature today, and I'm going to say this very slowly and clearly, sent a new bottle bill to the governor's desk. It's only been worked on for 44 years. This is a biggie, Laura.
Yes, and the Senate capitulated. They agreed to the House version of the bottle bill. So that was interesting, and I'm very curious to see what the House negotiators gave up in exchange for that. The two bills weren't that far apart. The House bill was slightly more amenable to some of the constituencies, but really the bottom line was similar. Neither bill expands the kinds of containers that are eligible for the deposit. So juice, water, sports drinks, none of that is covered. It's just the same soft drinks and beer that has been covered since 1978. They do the bill increases the redemption centers take from 1 penny to 3 cents. That's supposed to make the redemption centers more viable. The most controversial aspect of the bill, and this was the main reason why most of the Democrats voted against it, was that it makes it easier for retailers to opt out of accepting the cans and bottles back. So really any grocery store in the state of Iowa now almost would be able to opt out because it says it is, if you're a retailer, food retailer that has to keep food at a certain temperature, then you can decline to accept cans and bottles. And that would be every grocery store in the state that has to keep, whether it's rotisserie chicken or some things at a cold temperature, that's just going to make it easy. So we'll see. Right now, there are already a lot of grocery stores stores in Iowa that don't comply with the law as it is. So this will probably lead to a stampede of retailers not taking the cans and bottles back.
We've been joking about this for the last, 6 months on this broadcast, 4 months at least, about the bottle bill. And I've always said, I think it's time for the state legislature to do something. And you did not believe it was going to happen this year.
It's true. I said that no one ever lost money betting against the legislature doing something on the bottle bill, but I guess this year they would have if they had placed such a wager.
All right. Well, we'll have a soft drink in honor of this when we get back. How's that? When I get back there. All right. There are still things that need to be resolved this week in the state legislature before it can adjourn. Some major things. The biggest, the state budget.
Yes. And the House and the Senate bills are still not fully aligned. Some of them, they are in agreement, but some of the budget bills, there are still some details to be worked out. But they're really not that far apart either in an $8 billion budget to have $70 million or so in spending that they disagree on. I think that they'll work that out with little trouble. The main sticking point, as you mentioned, was that voucher bill, and the Senate has now given up on the House passing that.
Now, K-12 curriculum transparency is also something the governor has pushed, and some have tied it in with the private school scholarships bill. Are they still tied or have they been separated?
I think they're separated. I mean, Governor Reynolds has said in the past that she would like to sign both of those bills and she would like to see them tied together. But both the House and the Senate have passed versions of a school transparency. And I think that the House leaders will be eager to get something to the governor's desk on that so that their members can say that they supported at least part of the governor's education agenda. So I do expect something to happen. I don't know if it will look more like what the Senate initially passed as part of the school voucher bill or whether it will be a House proposal.
There's some other things that have to be passed before the legislature can adjourn, or they would like to pass anyway. Among them, limits on vaccine requirements.
Yes, and I don't know that I have not heard that they have agreed on language to that. There's a question about whether some of the proposals that have been floated in the Republican caucus might run afoul of federal law, so it's not clear what they're going to be able to do. And I don't sense that that's as much of a priority for the governor as some of the other outstanding issues.
What else do you see still out there that has to go on?
Well, there are some small things. I think the effort to restrict eminent domain, I think, is probably dead for this year, it sounds like. There are certain there's little bits of policy language that could be part of different budget bills. And there are always the last bill that they usually pass is called the standings bill, that is sometimes called the Christmas tree bill, because they stick so many things into that. Most years, they end up with some major new proposal. And so, for instance, we haven't heard yet whether there may be any new election law changes that are related to some of the petition signature collection issues that came up. It came before the Iowa Supreme Court. I mean, there's something in the Health and Human Services budget. There's possibly going to be some new funding allocated to pregnancy centers, or a program that would be for serving pregnant people, but without recommending abortion. So that's still out there. There are just a number of small things. I mean, there are even I've heard that the midwifery licensing bill, I don't think it's likely that that would be part of the mix, but something like that could be attached at the last minute to one of the budget bills.
And we'll be talking about all of this next Monday night as to what's happening in the legislature. And there's plenty more to talk about. But we want to take a quick diversion back to this taxpayer money to pay private school expenses, because in a maneuver rarely seen in Iowa politics, the governor endorsed the opponent of a sitting lawmaker and fellow Republican because of opposition to her private school voucher plan. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, this is interesting on several levels. So about a dozen of the House Republicans have primary challengers right now, and the governor has been rumored to be active behind the scenes in several of these primaries. And last week, she came out for the first time and said and admitted that, yes, she is supporting Barb McCullough in, this is the district that includes Pella. And it's a very conservative area. It's an area that has strong private schools. And so you can imagine that this school choice is an important issue to a lot of conservatives down there. Now, it was already known that the governor was supporting Barb McCullough because during the Pelop Tulip Festival parade, Barb McCullough was driving the governor's vehicle. So that was a very clear public endorsement that would not have been missed by the thousands of people lining the streets during the Tulip Festival. But in any case, it was that last week was the first public statement of support. And that is something, I mean, it's also interesting that the governor chose that district because there are anywhere from 15 to 20 House Republicans who don't support her voucher bill, and yet she's only publicly endorsed the challenger to one of them.
And Barb McCullough was probably driving a vehicle with E15, which we'll be talking about as well in just a moment. But first, again, back to the governor's voucher bill. The Family Leader anti-abortion group endorsed Republican Helena Hayes in House District 87 against incumbent Republican Dustin Height because Height isn't perceived as having done enough to get the governor's voucher bill through.
And that was interesting because Height was rumored to be an opponent of the voucher bill. But after that endorsement happened, I saw the first public comments that I had seen from him as saying, yes, I support other types of school choice proposals, but I don't think this is a good idea. And he actually came at it from the other direction, that he thought that it might be bad for the private schools to be directly getting state funding because he thought that might make them subject to more regulations. A district that includes Oskaloosa. And that is partly why this is a race that the governor has not publicly weighed in on. But as you mentioned, the Family Leader, which is a major social conservative organization, they've been active. They've endorsed several primary challengers, and that's one of the districts where they're active. They are also active in a House district in Northwest Iowa, where Dennis Bush, the incumbent, has been very public about opposing the governor's voucher plan. And the Family Leader is also active in a district in Northeast Iowa, where there are two issues there for them, both the school voucher bill and also anti-abortion legislation. So we'll be talking about a lot of this as the primary approaches, but there are many interesting Republican primaries this year on the legislative side.
There are indeed, and abortion and the voucher bill are going to play a big role in a lot of these things where Republicans are going against Republicans.
Yes, yes, it is. There are three Republicans in particular who have voted against some abortion legislation, and they all have primary challengers, and those races I'm going to be watching closely.
Right. Okay, back to E15. Governor Reynolds signed into law last week that bill requiring many gas stations to offer E15. It won't take effect for another 4 years, but gas stations, almost all of them, with some exceptions, are going to have E15 pumps.
Yes, and in theory, there's going to be help for the smaller stations that are exempt. If they want to comply, even though they could be exempt, there will be state grants that help them. But there were still several people who voted against this bill. They don't think it's going to be good for the smaller gas stations. But this was one. The governor has mentioned this before. She was working on it last year, and she was very happy to sign that public bill signing. You can always tell when the governor really wants to talk about a bill because she stages a separate event that's open to the media to sign the bill. Most things that she signs, it's just quiet in her office, and she doesn't even release any public statement, let alone have a public event about it.
Well, where she signed this, she was on top of a trailer, in a farm near Prairie City. And she said, in her words, "I've never been prouder than I am today to be the governor of the number one ethanol and biodiesel producing state in the country." She was very proud of that.
Yes. And I mean, yeah, there will be more stations in Iowa that will be selling E15. It's still a very small portion of gas stations nationwide that sell this fuel. It's not likely that many gas stations outside of Iowa are going to be retrofitting to sell this kind of fuel. So the impact on the industry is going to be questionable.
It's 15 after the hour, wherever you are listening to us, and you are in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. As always, I'm Dennis Hart. As always, she's Laura Bellin, and we're here every week at this time to talk politics, Iowa style, how it's affecting all of us, and we have a lot more to talk about before we're done tonight. Also last week, the governor signed into law a bill giving new but limited protections for Iowa mobile homeowners. Democrats said it just didn't go far enough.
Yes, this is something the legislature had been working on for years, since at least 2019. And the eventual compromise, it requires a little bit more notice, 90 days instead of 60 days for certain types of rent increases. But it doesn't do most of the things that the mobile home residents and owners wanted. It doesn't limit the number of rent increases per year. It doesn't limit the size of the rent increases. And there are various other protections that people who rent apartments in Iowa have, that people who are renting land to park their mobile homes on do not have and still will not have under this new law.
Okay. And again, we'll have much more on what the legislature has done this week, next Monday night on Capital Week. Now let's talk money. And this is always interesting to both Laura and me, because money is the mother's milk of politics, as we know. That's what Jesse Unruh said decades ago out in California. And it's true. The new campaign reporting figures that came in last week for statewide campaigns showing, first off, let's talk the gubernatorial race, Laura. Governor Reynolds has, let's just say, an immense advantage money-wise over Democrat Deidre DeGeer. Immense.
Yes. So the governor has just under $5 million cash on hand. That's just a huge amount of money. Iowa is a relatively low-cost state to run TV ads and radio ads. And Deidre DeGeer is not in as dire a situation as she was when we discussed this in January, but her campaign has less than $400,000 cash on hand. She raised about $750,000, which is a solid amount, but she spent about half of that. And so Deidre DeGeer is just not really in a position to run much of a paid media messaging campaign, at least not with the cash that she has now. She would have to raise quite a lot more before the primary, before she could run any kind of statewide radio or TV ads.
And this may have an impact because of how much the governor has on some other races. And we're going to get into this right now because she could spend some money there. But let's talk first about the attorney general race. Tom Miller, Democrat, seeking his 11th term, raised $169,000 from January 1st to May 14th. But he's going to give back $50,000 of it because it was an illegal campaign donation from a Democratic PAC. All right. So without that donation, he's going to have about $187,000 in the bank. But his opponent now has more than he does.
Yeah, Tom Miller's got big problems here. First of all, that was just a rookie mistake, accepting a PAC donation while the legislature was still in session. That's not allowed. And it's a little known portion of the state law, but that's something that the attorney general's campaign should have realized and not accepted that contribution. They're not the only campaign that had to return a gift for that reason, but that it's still a high profile mistake. Brenna Byrd ran for attorney general in 2010. And at that time, she had a huge amount of support from major donors in the Republican Party. The state party put more than $500,000 into her campaign. And all signs point to something like that scenario repeating. She raised a lot of money, primarily from large donors. She raised over $300,000, and most of that was in contributions of $1,000 or more. She had multiple donations of $10,000, $25,000, and that's without any money from any PACs. I do anticipate that after the legislature adjourns, that the Republican Attorneys General Association is going to come in with some big money for her campaign, and also the Republican Party of Iowa is probably going to direct big money for her campaign. So that could end up being the most expensive attorney general race in Iowa history, and I think it's very likely that the Republican challenger will be able to outspend Tom Miller.
Okay, she can outspend him. Now, does she have, in your opinion, you've covered this for a lot of years, does she have a real shot at defeating him?
I think she does have a shot. I mean, she did outspend him in 2010 and lost by quite a bit. Tom Miller and Mike Fitzgerald, the state treasurer, they have both survived the Republican wave years of 1994, 2010, and 2014. So they're both very long-serving incumbents. They have very high name ID, and that has a lot of advantages. But some research in other states suggests that people don't split their tickets as much as they used to. Signs are pointing toward a pretty strong Republican year. At least the prevailing political winds will be at the Republicans' backs. And so I don't think that those officials can take anything for granted. And I definitely think Brenna Byrd has a shot in that race.
Okay, let's talk about Democratic Treasurer Mike Fitzgerald again, seeking an 11th term. He has about $70,000 cash on hand, according to the latest figures, but his Republican opponent has much more than that.
Yes, and Robbie Smith is a state senator from the Quad Cities area. It was a little bit hard to tell from his report how much was people giving money to his state treasurer campaign, and then how much he raised a lot of money last year from PACs that may have been giving to him because he's the chair of the Senate State Government Committee. So there aren't usually a lot of PACs that donate to state treasurer candidates. So we'll see. I think the July reports are going to be very interesting to see whether the major donors get behind Robbie Smith in the treasurer's race to the same degree that they have gotten behind Brenna Byrd in the attorney general race. But Mike Fitzgerald never raises a lot of money, never spends a lot of money. I laughed going through his reports from 2014 and 2018. He raised so little, and then he didn't even spend spend down everything that he had. He ended those election years with $30,000 or $35,000 in the bank for his campaign. And he has coasted in the past on that very high name recognition that comes from being the longest serving state treasurer, not only in Iowa history, but in U.S. history. But again, we just don't know what is going to happen if it is a very strong election for Republicans and turnout is very strong for Republicans. I would not at all consider it. I wouldn't be that surprised to see the statewide races be a sweep for Republican candidates. Now, there's one irony about this race. And whenever I talk to somebody about the state treasurer's race, this comes up. Robbie Smith has been the main architect of election law changes in Iowa the last 5 years. And one of them eliminated the straight party ticket voting option. It used to be that at the top of the ballot, you could just mark the oval for Democrat or Republican and you were done. And that disappeared from ballots after the 2017 law. And everybody I've spoken to about this thinks that Robbie Smith would be a lot better off if people still had the option of just filling in that Republican oval, because he's going to need people to actually mark the ballot next to his name. And there may be people who support Republicans for other offices, but they recognize Michael Fitzgerald's name and they say, well, he seems to be doing an okay job and I'm going to vote for him again.
Okay, so Democrat Attorney General Tom Miller, Democratic Treasurer Mike Fitzgerald may or may not be in trouble. How about Republican Secretary of State Paul Pate? This is a low spending race. And there are two Democrats vying to run against him, but nobody's really raised a lot of money in this one.
No, and Paul Pate is a little bit of a special case because he has a history of self-funding his campaigns. His campaign still owes about $230,000 to him from a loan that he extended during the 2018 cycle. I think that he would probably be cutting his own campaign a big check again. So the Democrats, as you mentioned, they have a competitive primary. The Clinton County Auditor, Eric Van Lanker, raised quite a bit more than Linn County Auditor, Joel Miller, but neither of them would be coming out of that primary with any significant money in the bank. And so I think that it's likely that Paul Pate will be able to outspend the Democratic nominee in that race.
Right. Now, Democratic State Auditor Rob Sand, money-wise, is just swamping everybody. He's got more than $1 million in the bank. The GOP candidate's nowhere even close to that one.
No. And Rob Sand spent more on his race in 2018 than anyone who had ever run for state auditor in Iowa. Nobody had ever run TV ads in a state auditor's race. I think it was very unusual even for there to be paid radio in a state auditor's race. And he is looking like he's on track to repeat that. He certainly is not spending very heavily. He raised a couple hundred thousand this cycle and only spent about 77,000 of it. Again, as we mentioned, Deidre Dejere, who spent more than $350,000 since the beginning of the year. So he's kind of running a frugal campaign right now. And it looks like he's saving up a lot of money to have a big paid media push in the fall, like he did in 2018. Right now, the Republican candidates just aren't raising any money. I mean, it's a small amount of money, even for a state legislative campaign. The main establishment opponent, Marianne Hinoosa, doesn't even have $15,000 cash on hand right now. So she will need help. She will need the Republican Party of Iowa or Governor Kim Reynolds or somebody to come in and help her. Unfortunately for her, there's no National Republican State Auditors Association that's similar to the Republican Attorney General's Association that really rakes in a lot of money.
And one more race we want to talk about quickly. Republican Secretary of Agriculture Mike Naig has $155,000 cash on hand. Democratic opponent John Norwood has much, much less than that.
Yes. And it was interesting that they both raised about the same amount of money, around $25,000, $26,000 during this reporting period. But of course, Naig was bringing in a lot more cash on hand. John Norwood is a brand new candidate, only just launched his campaign earlier this year. So Mike Naig also in his 2018 race, he had a lot of support from corporations in the ag sector. There was a 527 organization that was created that ran TV ads promoting Mike Naig. And so it's possible that he could get that kind of outside help again. It's also possible that after the legislative session ends, his campaign may get a lot of money from PACs in the agriculture sector. But he is definitely going to have a big money advantage over John Norwood, the Democratic candidate.
So here's the question, quickly, with Kim Reynolds holding $5 million bucks in hand, she's not going to need all of that, most likely. How likely is she to spread the money around to some of these candidates down ticket who need it?
Well, she could, but as when I looked at her spending, she raised about $1.2 million, and she spent a lot of it. She spent close to $1 million. And so her burn rate is fairly high. Now she can get away with it because she has so much money in the bank. But if she continues to spend the level that she's been spending on consultants, she's going to need to spend another million plus just on keeping the, her op campaign operations going, let alone what she would be spending on TV and radio. When she was running against Fred Hubbell in 2018, she spent millions on TV. So looking at it, I mean, $5 million is a huge amount of money, but it's not as if she is going to have $3 or $4 million that she could turn over to other candidates. Now, it's also possible that the Republican Governors Association could come in and give her a lot of money. They gave her more than $1 million, I think, for the 2018 race, and something like that could happen again. But she may end up spending the bulk of her campaign funds on her own race. She could turn over quite a bit of it to the Republican Party of Iowa that could then direct it toward any of those other statewide races.
And very quickly, with a couple of minutes to go, Democratic U.S. Senate candidate Abby Finkenauer launched her first TV ad of the campaign. Mike Franken's been on TV for a while. It's going to come down to those two in a battle of TV ads.
Most likely, and Mike Franken is spending a lot more on TV than Abby Finkenauer is. So that is going to be, his ads will be reaching a lot more people. Now, I sometimes hear people say, well, who watches TV anymore? But remember, as we've discussed in the past, the majority of primary voters are over age 50, and there still are a lot of people who do watch TV. And both of those campaigns, I believe, are up on broadcast and cable TV. And that is still going to reach quite a lot of primary voters.
Just want you to know I'm going to be back in Ames tomorrow, and I'm going to start watching my favorite TV channel tomorrow night. I watch TV.
Yes.
Of course, I'm an old guy, right? Older guy. One more quick note here. Chuck Grassley, it was announced today, is not on Vladimir Putin's bad guy list. That's interesting.
It was interesting. So the Russia updated its sanctions list to now include more than 900 people. And the previous list already included all four Iowans in the U.S. House. The new list also includes Senator Joni Ernst, who was so excited about it. She put out a press release saying that she must be doing something right. And but Chuck Grassley was one of the Republicans not on that sanctions list. And it's hard to, I mean, I did a little bit of speculating today about why. I mean, he was very critical of the special counsel's investigation into the Trump campaign's possible ties to Russian sources. He also was involved in pushing a narrative about Ukrainian interference in the 2016 election that some U.S. intelligence officials characterized as a Russian disinformation campaign. But in any case, I couldn't get a comment from Senator Grassley's office. I did ask his staff today what they thought about him not being on the list, and there was no reply.
So take a breath. We've got about 45 seconds left. This is going to be a land rush of a week in the legislature. What do you expect to see happen?
Well, I'm just looking to see what kind of policy language gets added to those budget bills at the last minute. And in particular, I am interested to see whether they end up funding the alternatives, the pregnancy centers that don't recommend abortions to people, whether that ends up getting funded in a significant way in the Health and Human Services budget.
We will be following all of this week. And we will have a report next Monday night, which is Memorial Day night. Laura and I will be here, and it should be a heck of a week. You expect the legislature to be adjourned by Friday?
Yes, I think everybody expects them to be gone by the end of this week.
We will see what happens. So, Laura, you have a great week watching TV. See, you're going to be watching TV.
Right. I will. I watch it for the political ads.
Well, I do too. Isn't that crazy? All right. Well, thank you, everybody. We are out of time for this particular broadcast. You have been listening to Capital Week, as always, on KHOI Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I are going to Zoom right back here in this time slot next week, when we'll have the latest on what's going on politically inside and outside the state capitol. And for the first time in 6 months, I'm actually going to be at KHOI Studios on Monday night, and I'll be talking to you then, Laura. See you then.
I'll look forward to it, Dennis.
Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it. We value it. Have a great week, everybody.